Greetings, I am Tamarack Song. There's a tradition among storytellers to begin a story by honoring its source. This teaching story, which is known as Two Hungry Bears, came to me with the reminder that good stories have a way of traveling. I find the same ones not only in the expected places where there's a history of cultural exchange, but also in diverse and isolated cultures around the world. The original version of Two Hungry Bears came to me from the Cherokee people by way of my Irish-American friend, Patty Miller, of all things, and she in turn got it from her sister in England. In the original story from Patty, the two animals were wolves. I chose bears instead, to break from our culture's stereotype of the vicious wolf. Also, in the original story, the wolves remain separate and opposed to each other. This fits for the Cherokee because they're agriculturalists who typically draw a line between domestic and wild and between cultivated and untended. When this line exists in a culture, it usually cuts through the people of the culture as well. Life gets divided between the polarities of good and evil, and it becomes an eternal struggle between the two, and this division is allegorized by the two wolves. With hunting-gathering peoples, the line between good and evil, as well as between domestic and wild, isn't so well defined. While living an intimate relationship with all of life, Native people find little reason to categorize. This was probably reflected in the original Two Hungry Wolves when it was a hunter-gatherer story, and my intent in revising the story was to restore it to something approximating the original. There are a few Ojibwe words in this story, which I'd like to introduce to you now before the story begins. Bear in Ojibwe is Mukwa. Mukwa, and wolf is Maingan, Maingan. Grandfather, one of the main characters in the story, is called Mishomis, Mishomis. And now, here is the story of Two Hungry Bears. Our people have a saying that when all is quiet under a blanket of snow, Mukwa wake up. Now these are not your ordinary Mukwa who typically hibernate when the snow lies deep. No, I'm talking about the Mukwa who wait to come out during the white season, when the nights are long and cold, and virtually all of life is snug asleep in warm, sheltered places. On nights like this, only the far-off call of Maingan, or owl, reminds us that anything at all might still be moving about. On one such night, a young boy named Ottertail sat up late by himself. His family was long asleep, snuggled into a pile of plush furs. And yet his fretful mind would not let him join them. He could find nothing to do but stare at his faint shadow, which was cast on the wall by the pale yellow glow of the fading fire in the center of the lodge. Ottertail was a carefree child, always clear in what he thought and felt. Only now, as he approached his 10th winter, his life began spinning in a confusing web of feelings. Tonight he stared at the wall as though searching for something in his silhouette that he couldn't find inside himself. The wailing chorus of nearby Maingan shook Ottertail out of his trance. As the howls trailed off to rejoin the stillness, Ottertail's eyes opened wide in a sudden realization. I'll go and see Mishomis. He is wise like a mountain. Perhaps he can help. It was all Ottertail could do to not awaken his family. He He quickly tended the fire, snatched his fox fur robe, and darted out the door. Even before he got the robe fully wrapped around him, he was across the clearing and entering Meshomas' lodge. "It is very late, and you are awake, honored Meshomas," Ottertail said in a surprised voice as he entered the cozy lodge. The elder was not only up, but he was building up the fire, as though he were expecting someone. "Meshomas is also opposite the door, the place for greeting visitors," thought Ottertail. Perhaps the doorway was drafty, and he wanted to sit where it was warmest. Out of respect, Ottertail kept his confusion to himself and sat in the traditional place for children, which was to the left of the door. From there, they could easily run errands for their elders, or, as they saw it, scoot out quickly to play. "Honored Meshomas," spoke Ottertail straight away, "this boy's belly is being torn apart. It feels like two hungry Mukwa battling each other. Often they fight in his dreams, and sometimes even in the day when he feels impatient or sad, they wake up and claw at each other." Meshomas looked intently into the fire. "I know them well," he replied. "They live inside me also, and perhaps inside everybody. One is the Mukwa of Balance, who comes when we trust in the gifting way, and the other is Mukwa out of balance, who comes when we trust only in ourselves." Meshomas said no more. He stirred the coals, and they both sat in silence. After a while, the boy spoke. "Meshomas, can you tell me which one will win?" "The one you feed, my child." "How would I feed the Mukwa of Balance? I want him to grow strong." "With your heart," was his Meshomas' simple reply. Before another voice was heard, the fire had burned down to deep orange embers, casting just enough light into the blackness to mark the features of their faces. "But Meshomas, they're both me. If I don't feed one, I don't feed myself." "Yes, my child, you are wise beyond the turns of the seasons you've been blessed to know. In truth, there is only one Mukwa. Just as cloud and sun come together to make the day, the two fighting Mukwa join to help us see both the dark and the light. Now go to be with your family under the sleeping robe, my dear grandson, so that your two Mukwa might find their place of rest within you. Together they will guide you through love and battle as you walk this journey of life, and they will help you find vision in blindness." "Oh, Meshomas, you speak in riddles," Ottertail said with a lightened heart, "and yet they bring me comfort. Sometimes I understand the wisdom of your smile better than the wisdom of your words. This child is grateful, dear father of my father. He shall carry your smile into his dreams."